Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, it's Friday, February 24th, 2017. On this day, 149 years ago, Andrew Johnson became the first president of the United States to be impeached by the U.S. House. The Raleigh, North Carolina native was later acquitted by the U.S. Senate. Indeed, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Today on the program, a couple of news roundups and a trivia question. Full disclosure, both of these segments already aired on WUNC on Friday. The first is a discussion with conservative and liberal voices about the week in politics. This airs Fridays at 4:50 p.m. on the station and also online. You can stream it there. If you've already heard that, then just fast forward in the podcast 8 minutes and you can catch Frank Stasio and me chatting about the week in politics. Our discussion was heard at noon on the State of Things on Friday. And if you've already tuned in for both of these radio segments, thank you, and all I can offer you is a trivia question. First person to find me on Twitter, Facebook, email, or text, whatever, gets a prize. This week's question, who was the last vice president of the United States who had no previous experience as a federal official before becoming VP? Good luck. Now for the week in news. You're listening to All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Today we continue our new political segment, Reviewing the Week in North Carolina Politics. Today's conversation includes voices from both sides of the aisle. Becky Gray is a lobbyist and senior vice president at the conservative John Locke Foundation, and Rob Schofield is director of research at NC Policy Watch, part of the left-leaning North Carolina Justice Center. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
We'll get to House Bill 2 and the repeal proposal, the latest one momentarily. First, the ongoing power struggle between the legislative and executive branches. Lawmakers passed a measure back in December during a special session requiring gubernatorial cabinet picks to receive Senate confirmation. Governor Roy Cooper sued over this, and it's playing out in the courts. Meanwhile, senators have tried to move forward with hearings, but Larry Hall, tapped to oversee the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, hasn't showed up for these scheduled hearings. After multiple warnings, the legislature took the rare step this week of issuing a subpoena to compel Hall to show up. Becky, let's begin with Senate Republicans. What are they really trying to accomplish here?
Well, they're trying to follow through on the law that was passed, as you mentioned, in December, that the Senate can confirm the governor's appointments for these state agencies. This is laid out in the Constitution. I believe that it's pretty clear. It says in the Constitution that the Senate can do this. Now, they have not done it before. This is something new, and we're seeing a lot of pushback from Governor Cooper, and this is playing its way through the courts as well. A three-judge panel stepped in. At first, they said, no, the General Assembly could not go through with the confirmation hearings. Then that three-judge panel reversed themselves and said, yes, they could go through with it. That's what the Republicans this week are moving on, that assumption. Roy Cooper disagrees with that. It kind of gets down to what is a nomination, what is.
Right. And there's plenty of legalese in here. To quote Senate Pro Tem Phil Berger, the leader of the Senate, most powerful man in politics in the state, he said on Thursday, I think you can read the court order several ways, but it is our belief that the court order does not limit us from proceeding. Rob, a Senate confirmation process on the state level, picturing it similar to what President Trump's cabinet nominees are subject to, is that really so bad?
I really think it's a preposterous power grab by the Senate, which has pretty much been consistent with how the Senate has operated over the last several years. They've been consistently trying to accumulate power in a variety of ways. This is just the latest. And I think the controversy that they're confronting right now is in large measure a byproduct of having rammed this bill through in December without having hearings and experts and constitutional law experts come and explain how this might be done. The bottom line is that the Supreme Court actually ruled, the state Supreme Court ruled last year in the McCrory versus Berger case, made it clear that this authority applies to appointing constitutional officers, not statutory officers. And so that's Governor Cooper's position. He's saying, wait a minute, this is an enormous sea change in North Carolina. It's not provided for in the Constitution, and that's why he's suing. And if you think about it as a practical matter, it would be an enormous shift in the power structure in our state.
We'll move on from this for now. Another turn in the House Bill 2 saga came Wednesday evening when a bill with bipartisan support to repeal House Bill 2 was filed. It does not have the support yet of the governor, of hardline conservatives in the House, or of the most progressive members of that chamber. Rob, does this bill have a chance of going anywhere?
I suppose it has a chance of going somewhere. I don't think it has much of a chance of becoming law, nor do I think it should become law. It is really a compromise in name only. It purports to repeal HB 2, but the central, most infamous and controversial part of HB 2, the part about denying transgender people equal access to restroom facilities, we wouldn't just place a moratorium on that, we'd make that permanent. So that central, most controversial part of HB 2 would be made permanent by this so-called compromise. So I don't see how that gets us really very far forward or any further forward in this. I don't think it's likely to please anybody at the national level, any of the national sports associations or corporations. It clearly isn't satisfying advocates for equality or civil rights.
Becky, I want to hear from you briefly for our listeners who might not know some of the details of this bill. House Bill 186 would repeal HB 2. It would also give the state authority over all multi-stall bathrooms moving forward. Cities in the future wanting to pass their own non-discrimination ordinances would be required to give the legislature a 30-day warning. And that would be followed by a 90-day enactment period. So any local ordinance or protection wouldn't take place for another 3 months or so. During that time, opponents could gather signatures, as I read the bill yesterday. And if enough signatures are collected, that would prevent any ordinance or protection from taking place and would put the issue before voters on the next ballot as a voter referendum. Do you support this particular proposal for a repeal?
I'm still looking at it. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't have a vote at the General Assembly. So whether I support it or not really doesn't matter. There's one other piece of the bill, though, and you described it exactly right, but there's one other piece of the bill that I think is significant, is that it includes a statewide non-discrimination law that would ban discrimination on the basis of race, sex, national origin, citizenship. Basically, it reflects...
But what did you not mention? It doesn't include LGBT, right?
Race, well, sex. And that's kind of been the whole question of HB 2 and the reliance on the Title IX definition of sex. I mean, that's what it goes back to.
Rob noted that he doesn't think this repeal bill, if it moves forward, would appease the NCAA, the ACC, the NBA. What is your stance on that?
I don't think we know the answer to that. Representative McGrady, who's kind of leading this fight on this particular bill, has said they haven't conferred. You know, they're not doing this for the NCAA. They're doing this to try to come to some resolution on this issue that has taken up so much time and so much effort and sucked so much air out of the room for the last year and a half. That's what the effort is. I disagree with Rob. I think that the votes are not there for full repeal. I think that's one reason why that hasn't happened. What I do see since this bill has been filed over the last several years, as we're moving into sort of the next phase of this bill is really gaining a lot of attention. There have been additional members of the General Assembly from both the right and the left who have signed on to this bill. The North Carolina Chamber has come out in favor of it. The North Carolina Realtors Association in favor of it. A lot of these business communities are coming out and saying this is the direction that we believe will resolve this issue. I think it's gaining momentum. I think that there's a very likelihood that this may be what releases that logjam. Now, will this be something that will appease all of the people on the far left of this issue?
No.
Will this be something that will appease all the people on the far right of this issue? No. But are there enough people in the middle, kind of that moderate middle, from both sides of the aisle that are comfortable enough with this to pass this? I think the likelihood of this, as the discussions are going, we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. I think the likelihood is, I'm feeling pretty optimistic.
The only groups that really matter in the business community are the national and international corporations who have launched this boycott of North Carolina and who are exercising it. And unless you bring back the ACC and the NCAA and Apple and all these other, PayPal, these giant corporations, it's silly. It's not worth it.
Rob Schofield is Director of Research at NC Policy Watch, part of the Progressive North Carolina Justice Center. Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the Conservative John Locke Foundation. Thank you both.
Thank you,
Jeff.
To hear more of our conversation, visit our website, WUNC.org.
Hi, this is John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats. This is one of our songs. It's in the mix at WUNC Music.
But I am just a broken machine, and I do things that I don't really mean. Long black night.
You can hear that song and discover lots of other great stuff on WUNCmusic.org. Are you listening?
This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lawmakers in the State House have filed a bipartisan proposal to repeal HB 2, but it has some conditions. Since the bill was filed, more than a dozen other representatives have signed on as co-sponsors, mostly Republicans. While a few Democrats have signed on, the proposal has not met with widespread acceptance. Many Democrats and LGBT rights groups say this repeal measure does not undo all of the discriminatory damage of HB 2, and it's not clear whether it has support in the Senate. Here to tell us more about that and other legislative activities is Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
All right, more details on this so-called bipartisan proposal.
This is the first bipartisan proposal that we have seen in the efforts to potentially repeal or significantly alter HB 2. There was a plan or a pact that fell apart in December, and that fell apart for a number of different reasons, perhaps all of which we will not ever fully comprehend and know. But they're taking another crack at it here. Republican Chuck McGrady is the one who is leading this effort. This bill would, in the first lines of the bill, says that it would repeal HB 2. What it would then do is give the state authority over all multi-stall bathrooms moving forward. Then, if any municipality, be that Durham or Wilmington or Asheville, wanted to pass a non-discrimination ordinance or protection of its own, it can't deal with multi-stall bathrooms, but something else, whether that's an employment protection or some sort of symbolic or protection with teeth, they would have to give the legislature a 30-day notice to say, hey, we, X city, we will be passing this in 30 days. Then, if the city adopted it in 30 days, there would be a, stick with me here, a 90-day enactment window, a three-month window. So Durham or Wilmington or Asheville, whatever, would say, all right, it's April 1st. We passed this local ordinance. It's going to take effect in 90 days, so about July 1st. During that time, opponents of this measure could go out and get signatures. And if they got enough signatures, it would not go into effect. So any effort to protect the LGBT community, and there certainly would be others, but that's obviously the most obvious one. The local ordinance wouldn't take effect. It would go to the next election and be a voter referendum.
Wow. So, wow, it's a long process.
Yes,
interesting. Curious to know what would happen if there was a referendum on HB 2 right now. Could go down in one night. If there's, given the unpopularity, the last polls show there's a majority that doesn't support.
To that point, a Civitas poll, a conservative poll, said 55% of North Carolinians recently would like to see repeal.
That'd be interesting if there's a referendum on HB 2. But this would allow for referenda, and therein lies the sticking point, or at least one of the sticking points for critics of this repeal measure.
Yeah, and what's interesting at this point is it's such a polarizing, divided time. This is a bill that is more moderate, that comes toward the middle. The hard right-liners, no thank you. The progressives and the more liberal members, and there aren't that many, but those in the North Carolina House have said this is a non-starter. We're not going to put on the ballot civil, and they're calling it civil rights. So this would take a bipartisan effort to get through. I talked to one Republican staffer yesterday, and he laid it out as at this point there's a block of voters, maybe as many as 30 Republicans in the North Carolina House, and it's not clear yet how they're going to vote on this, because it's politics, right? If you have a conservative district and you vote to repeal this divisive measure, you might see a primary challenge a year from now.
Right.
So that's one thing they're thinking about. And if it gets through the House, how does this fare in the more conservative Senate? Would it even come up for a vote? And then we've got the governor, who has already expressed concerns over this proposal. Would he potentially, Roy Cooper, veto it? I think the big piece for listeners and for us to keep an eye on is what, if anything, the NCAA, the ACC, Deutsche Bank, PayPal, some of these bigger international corporations that have been very outspoken against House Bill 2. What, if anything, they have to say in the days and weeks to come?
Yeah, we've seen some support in the business community in the state of North Carolina saying that they like this proposal. Now, the Republicans have dug themselves a huge hole by this discriminatory legislation. They passed it in a day. There was no scrutiny. There was no accountability. They just did it. And now they're having to reap the whirlwind. They'd like to get Democratic support, but ultimately, Jeff, it comes down to a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate that has control over whether or not HB 2 is repealed and business environment improves in North Carolina, right?
It's an important note, and it's not to hammer anybody unfairly. Republicans have supermajorities in both chambers. So for the last 5 years, if there's something they want to get through, they've been able to get it through. But this obviously points to the divide within the Republican caucus over this ongoing controversial bathroom legislation.
All right. Well, let's talk about some other issues here that the legislature has taken up. Heated exchanges in a Senate committee as Secretary of Military and Veterans Affairs Larry Hall, for the third time, did not show up for his confirmation hearing. Why not?
Well, the General Assembly passed a law back in December. This was during another one-day special session. This dealt with separation of powers, and after it was determined that Republican Pat McCrory would be leaving the executive mansion and Democrat Roy Cooper was coming in, the General Assembly moved to strip some of the executive powers, alter, shift some of the executive powers, use whatever word you most prefer. And one of those mandated a state Senate confirmation hearing process for 10 of the executive cabinet members. There have been lawsuits filed over this by the governor. It is playing out in court. A three-judge panel has ruled in part on this. And to be clear, Senator Berger said yesterday that there are various ways you can look at this piece of at this ruling from the three-judge panel, which just the whole thing's confusing.
It's confusing, but it does mean that the final court judgment on the legality of the hearing process hasn't been made yet.
No.
And so the Democrats are essentially saying, look, we've got to run a government. We'll wait for the courts to rule on this. In the meantime, here are my appointees. I'm going to go. And we're not sure that your process is legal.
Republicans are saying we, in fact, can move forward with this.
Absolutely can move forward. And here are the hearings. Show up, Larry, and Larry doesn't show up. So here's Phil Berger talking about why he thinks that Larry Hall and others should show up for the hearing process that is still in the courts. Senator Phil Berger, who is, of course, the senator who leads the Republican majority in the Senate.
Transparency in government is a good thing. Giving the people of this state an opportunity to learn about unelected department heads who will control billions of their tax dollars is not something anyone should be fighting. Nor should it be controversial that public officials must, like everyone else, follow the law. It is mind-boggling that this is even considered controversial and that the governor is fighting back so hard.
Now, as we hear him read that statement, it has to be said he's fairly new to this concept of transparency, since they didn't have this process for the 4 years a Republican governor was in place.
Well, it's politics. So whether the Republicans or the Democrats are in power, the goalposts are constantly shifting, right? I mean, that's what this is about. And this is about power. There is no longer a Republican serving at the bully pulpit of North Carolina. There's a Democrat there, and Republicans want to flex their muscles, so to speak.
Democratic Senator Floyd McKissick pushed back against Phil Berger.
It's about power. It's a pure power play. It's a Republican majority who at this point in time are trying to establish their rank and superiority over Governor Cooper and try to make certain that they can hold him accountable, bring him in here, bring his appointees in here, even those pending litigation dealing with these issues.
All right, that's Democratic Senator Floyd McKissick on Larry Hall's confirmation hearing. So where are we, Larry Hall?
They issued a subpoena yesterday. I guess we didn't address
I
should have said that. Sorry, it was bouncing around in my head. So the legislators gave Larry Hall, from their perspective, three opportunities to show up and answer questions about if he has conflicts of interest, if he can do this role, if he will obey the law. Mr. Hall, who we should note is a former House representative from Durham, has not shown up. So they issued a subpoena. This is a rare step. They don't just dole these things out at the General Assembly. They haven't done it in 6 years. So it's political theater. It is ramping up this game of chicken. And Larry Hall is expected to be there next week. We'll see if he shows up or if the governor moves to stop somehow this subpoena.
Meanwhile, he's in the job. He's been sworn in.
He's been in the job, and he's getting paid to do the job.
Yeah. And so all of this is really kind of tying up state government, and we're going to try to figure out how we can move forward pending the litigation on that. Well, listen, speaking of judges and the judiciary, a final this week, a bill advanced that would make judicial races partisan. Tell us more about that.
Yes, that moved through the House by a 65-51 vote. So a relatively close vote in the House. All the Democrats voted against it. They were joined by six Republicans. Superior and district court judgeships under this bill would become partisan, and candidates would have to declare an R or a D next to his or her name. Now, move through the House, has to go through the Senate. Not entirely clear at this point how much support there is there for those folks. This is part of a broader effort by Republicans to make judgeship races, make judicial races partisan. They did it with the State Court of Appeals last year. It was to their advantage. Republicans of the 15 judges, appellate judges in North Carolina, Republicans hold 10 of those seats. And we should note that last year on the ballot, there was a pretty big race between Edmonds and Morgan. Bob Edmonds, the incumbent in the North Carolina Supreme Court, and Mike Morgan, the challenger. There was no R or D next to those names. And on a night when Republicans really carried November 8th, right, it was the Democrat Morgan who won the swing seventh seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court. So Republicans believe recent history shows them that this is to their advantage, and that's part of the reason they're doing it.
And it has not always been this. We now have nonpartisan elections, but we've had partisan elections in the state before.
That's right. So superior and district judge races went from partisan to nonpartisan under Democratic leadership in 1996. That was for the Superior Court judges and district court judges in 2001. And now we're seeing perhaps the transfer back the other way. It's in motion.
All right. We will stay tuned. Thank you very much, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff Duggar. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure. That'll do it for this edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. Feel free to share it on Twitter or Facebook. Subscribe to the program as well on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And remember to find all the latest political stories at our website, WUNC.org. I'm Jeff Tiberio. Enjoy your weekend.